This is Chick Flick Fix. I'm Julia Scott.
And I'm AJ Knox.
We watch chick flicks and rom-coms and decide if they need fixing. Can we make them better or can we make them weird? You can check out our Patreon at patreon.com/chickflickfix. And you will hear all of the maybe weird tangents that I go on as bonus material. This week, we're talking about Spice World from 1997.
Why did you make me watch this movie?
It's directed by Bob Spears. And I love the writing credits here. Spice Girls, idea. Kim Fuller, idea. Jamie Curtis, additional writing.
That's it's what like this movie is. This movie is just some ideas with some additional writing.
So there's no like main writer on this, and I kind of love that.
But that is honestly what this movie is.
So it's kind of when we were talking about Mamma Mia, that it was like a reverse Mad Libs, that you just kind of fill in the stuff in between the things. Yeah. And here is, yeah, it's additional indeed.
Oh my god.
Bob Spears also directed a bunch of French and Saunders, Absolutely Fabulous, a bit of Fry and Laurie, Fawlty Towers, Murder Most Horrid. Basically, he's directed a number of episodes for a lot of the UK's biggest comedy shows from the 70s, 80s, and 90s.
That's really, like, that makes sense, because this does feel, I mean, this does obviously feel very British in a number of ways, but I'm like, also, he brought in a bunch of those stars. He brought in like Ab Fab and Hugh Laurie.
Yeah, this is cameo heavy, and each one made me giggle, even though I knew that they were coming in theory. There's one that got cut out, which is Gary Glitter. They filmed it, but then he went to jail for child pornography. So when they go to Italy to do that performance, they're doing a song by Gary Glitter. And he was in like one version of that, and then they were like, let's not.
Yeah.
There's one. I don't know what you would call it—a verbal cameo, more of a reference—that has changed in the UK version. The judge, played by Stephen Fry, says, "Call Gary Barlow," and because apparently he was not well known enough, they changed it to call.
I have no idea who that is.
Call Hootie and the Blowfish, or as Steven says, Hootie and the Blowfish, which I think is
Hootie and the Blowfish,
which is so funny. This movie is listed among the 100 most enjoyably bad movies ever made in the official Razzie movie guide.
I don't know how. I need to look at that movie guide though.
Okay, and this is amazing trivia. Billie Eilish. She was born in 2001, and she's admitted in interviews that for a while, until 2017, she thought that the Spice Girl were a fictional band made for this film, like Spinal Tap. But wannabe, like, even if you know nothing else. But I guess
That's the thing, though. Like, there are, like, some movies where it's, like, a fictional band.
Josie and the Pussycats?
Well, Josie and the Pussycats, yeah, but the Tom Hanks movie.
That Thing You Do.
That Thing You Do. That became, like, those became, like, hits.
Yeah, and Josie and the Pussycats, it's funny, too, because, like, you feel very strong parallels, and it came out only a few years later, I think. I think that you see strong parallels.
I think, to me, like, having never seen either of these movies, actually, that's a lie. I must have seen this movie. Because I remembered Richard O'Brien coming out of the toilet. And I don't know why. Like, that's the only thing about this movie that lived in my brain.
Yeah, I saw this in theaters, I'm pretty sure. And I may have seen it once more in the 25-ish years since. But this is the first time I'm seeing it, like, in modern recollection.
Yeah. But Josie and the Pussycats feels like a... what this movie wanted to be.
Yeah. Spoiler, I enjoyed this movie. I enjoyed it the first time I enjoyed it. Now I absolutely see its flaws. But you can very much tell the same way we were talking about, like, with Sister Act 2, which basically, you know, got a sequel approved before the movie was, you know, almost out. Here you can tell, like, okay, we need to capitalize on how mega huge the Spice Girls are right now.
That's what I was, like, thinking. Like, early in the film, there's a... I say film. Early in the movie, there's...
In the picture.
I'm not... In the moving picture. Early in the picture, there's a cameo from Elton John. And I was like, Elton John? What the frig is Elton John doing in this movie? And then I remembered, oh, yeah, the Spice Girls were the biggest thing in that, like, for like 4 years in the 90s.
Yeah, because Wannabe was released in 1996. So it was very much a like, all right, we got to do this. We got to do this fast. Do you want to go through the plot such as it is? So,
I mean, okay. There is almost, there. We're 30 minutes into this movie, and Jenna, I was going to, like, put it on while I did some work, and Jenna saw that I was watching, she, like, the opening number is the kind of smoky, like, too much of nothing, it's good.
And that with one, the whatever. Sort of Bond style.
Yeah, and graphics. It's like, but it's also, like, very, it's very porny sounding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, that was one of the things that Punch and I were talking about, that I mean, none of these are super explicit songs, but it's very much the case of, like, listening to them now, you're like, okay, a lot of this has, it's a lot more suggestive than I thought it was at the time. Never mind then, like, other songs that are way more suggestive or outright explicit than the things people complain about nowadays.
Yeah, Jenna made the joke. Well, because I started watching it. And she was like, she turned to me with like this look of like, are you just sitting here watching porn in the living room on your computer? Like, she was so confused. And you were like,
it's for the pod.
It's for the podcast. And then she realized it was Spice World. She goes, okay, you don't get to watch this. You have to wait until I'm going to watch it tonight with you. So I had to wait. And during that opening song, there's like a line that's like, I need a man, not a boy who thinks he can, mm-hmm. or something like that, which is like, loose, like, and Jenna was like, 10-year-old me belting this at the top of my lungs. I was like, yeah, that checks out.
I do think, though, that this is a movie that you do want to watch in company because you need someone to look over at and, like, chuckle with, both at, like, the things that actually make you chuckle and at the jokes that are so bad they go through good and maybe back to bad again and then maybe back to good.
Yeah, and that's the this movie had maybe a handful of jokes that I, like, were like, oh, that's pretty clever. Mm-hmm. There's some, and that's, I think, probably my guess would be that's Bob Spears, right? That's the director's, you know, with the history of, like, Fawlty Towers is maybe one of the funniest shows ever made. There's parts of it that definitely have not aged well. It's definitely a product of its time.
It's also funny that Fawlty Towers, it feels like, you know, it ran forever and had 100 bajillion episodes, but it's like two seasons.
Two seasons.
And they're short seasons, too.
Yeah, it was like, I think there's like 12 episodes, maybe, total?
Well, I could see also, like, if you think about, like, additional writing, I could see this also being written by someone who, like, maybe even just, like, bring in a handful of people who work on skit shows, who work on comedy shows.
Yeah.
Because it is very much just like stacked skits, right? And like silly visual puns and like just it's a very, very, very simple movie.
It's, well, like I was saying, we were 30 minutes in and I turned to Jenna and I was like, we're a third of the way through the movie and the plot hasn't started yet. Like there's no plot. And I think at some point I started to lose my mind. I feel like the movie started to feel like it was going on forever. But the George Went and Michael Kids in the Hall guy. Why can't I think of his name? Mark McKinney. Mark McKinney. The guys who were like pitching the film, and they keep pitching a Spice Girls movie. And at some point, one of the characters says something like, "Yeah, but there's no plot." And I'm like, "Did anyone catch that?" But yeah, I mean, basically, the whole movie is a series of mishaps and wacky, you know, side quests and things on the way for the Spice Girls to do this big concert in London.
So this is the kind of jukebox style movie where all of the songs are performances, like all the song numbers. Like in Mamma Mia, they just show up funnily.
It's a musical.
And in Josie and the Pussycats, it's a mix of sort of music video and fantasy sequences. mm-hmm. and a few performances.
And this is all like...
This is all right, diegetically appropriate. Yeah. Like, hey, here's the training montage. And then you just kind of try to connect, like, with your little red yarn on your board. And the yarn keeps falling off. You just let it land where it lands.
Yeah, I mean, so it's... So there's, like, several things happening at once. The Spice Girls are on their way on a tour, basically, to go do this. That, in and of itself, is incoherent. They start off in London, they have a show in London, and then they do a tour to get to their show.
Which I think probably makes sense. Like, they have a live show at Albert Hall, which is like, oh, it's going to be live streamed. And I feel the same way as when we talked about Josie and the Pussycats. It's like going to be four frames per minute. Live streamed
in 97.
So that's like the big deal. But then they also have to sort of briefly do other performances, which I could see agents just like booking, like, hey, we have to go to Milan and do this absolutely bizarre thing. But I mean, basically, they have to get it to the live show. There's a newspaper magnate in Australia who I think represents a bunch of real people, and he needs better headlines. So he's like, we're going to break them up. They send the most...
Who is Barry Humphries, a.k.a. Dame Edna, a.k.a. the MC Dr. Frankenfurter replacement in Shock Treatment, which is the sequel to Rocky Horror Picture Show, did you ever watch Shock Treatment? Were you ever part of that thespian group that like had the VHS? I had a VHS. I think a handful of us did. I love it. I might like it more than I like actually Rocky Horror. It's so friggin' weird.
Yeah, no, I mean, this is definitely like a star-studded cast, and I think at least three or four people were like, I did it so that like I could get an autographed poster for my niece slash child slash...
I'm sure there was a lot of that happening. Bob Hoskins probably had a niece who like...
Definitely. Yeah, no, there's amazing...
Bob Hoskins, like, amazing. He's done some amazing stuff, and then he's like... Super Mario Brothers, Spice World.
But yeah, so he's like, I'm going to break them up and I'm going to, you know, I need to get juicy headlines. He sends a weird borderline albino spy type dude.
Who is Richard O'Brien, a.k.a. Riff Raff, a.k.a. the creator of Rocky Horror.
Yep. And they have to train for stuff, and they see their friend. They fight, sort of. They see their friend have a baby. They do the concert. And save the world and the ice rink. The end.
Yeah. And meanwhile, Alan Cumming is this documentary filmmaker who's trying to like capture this documentary about the Spice Girls that he really wants to be really edgy and provocative. You know, along the way, they meet a group of aliens, as you do, who ask Jerry Howell for a kiss, as you do.
And tickets to the show.
And tickets to the show. Oh, are you the Spice? Yeah, are you the Spice Girls? One of the things I love about that weird-ass scene is the costumes are awful, and they make up this weird language for the aliens, and there's, like, 2 seconds, and then all the Spice Girls can communicate with them, and I love how they just don't explain that.
There's something very British about just the absurdity of where you're like, okay, sure.
Yeah, there is a wackiness to a lot of this. Also, if going back to... like movie references. So also Rocky Horror, Meatloaf is their bus driver.
Mm-hmm.
And I know Meatloaf has done more than just Rocky Horror.
And Meatloaf says, I'll do a lot for these girls, but I won't do that.
But I won't it's just do like, that. Yeah.
It's so, again, it's so bad that it crosses into good and back into bad.
Yeah. We get cameo from Jennifer Saunders, like in her,
full
like,
Idina glory. She's credited as fashionable woman, which I love, where it was like they didn't want to pay for the actual trademark rights. But Jennifer Saunders did it. Roger Moore is the amazingly cryptic head honcho at the record company slash criminal mastermind. I don't know, well, but I love it.
Like very clearly Bond villain, which I actually really loved that, because you have to imagine, for the target audience of this film in 1997, Roger Moore had not been a Bond in years. The target audience was 15-year-old girls.
this has so many elements of your sort of standard kind of Pixar movie, where it's like, well, we know that right. there are going to be a lot of parents who will have to sit through this, so we will have yes. sort of several levels of storyline and visual tomfoolery so that the parents can be like, oh, that's funny. That's like, so that the little kids are just like, yay, story. And the adults in the room can be like, all right, I'm enjoying portions of this. Yeah. But having to mash them together is not necessarily an awesome recipe. But there are so many amazing, stupid jokes, like the Spice Force 5. Funny.
Yeah.
That's yeah. the thing. Like, I think you have to kind of just go into this and be like, this is just going to be like having, you know, chips and chocolate thrown into your mouth. You just kind of accept it. And every 15th chip is also going to be kind of bad. But you know what I mean? It's just like, there's no point to it, and I don't care.
Yeah, and like, there's, to me, there are a handful of moments in this movie where it's like, where they really just kind of lean into that absurdity and lead into that goofiness. Like the fact that their tour bus is basically a TARDIS, you know, yeah. it's bigger on the inside. Like that feels, particularly because it is British, that feels like very much a wink and a nod to Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm. I love the special effect of a toy bus jumping, because they're talking about how it's too expensive to do.
Yeah.
And they're like, doesn't have to be. Like, it's just, it's so many levels of meta and silly. And it just, it fills me with such joy. And parts of it are like, is for how many like bad but fun jokes there are, it is also at times spectacularly badly written, which is not helped up by having non-actors in the main right. roles, where it's like, okay, so Jerry is supposed to be the brainy one, head of censorship and mind control, and she,
oh, is that what she's supposed to be?
Well, not that's a Crazy Ex-Girlfriend reference, but you know, she's supposed to be the brainy one, and it's like, and this, we show this by talking about manta rays, okay. But I can't, I don't know if this is like my The Room or something, where I'm just like, I just enjoy this so immensely. It just, it's so silly and stupid and amazing. Do you have a favorite character? Is it just like all of the cameos are your favorite character?
Yeah, I think I liked the cameos. I think my favorite character, just because he was, I think because he was so weird and grotesque and cartoony.
Is it the photographer?
No, the Kevin McMaxford, the newspaper mm-hmm. magnate.
He is the voice of Ponce's absolute favorite joke in this movie, which was the cure for deja vu.
That's my favorite joke. It's such a dumb joke. It's like the cure for deja vu. It's so dumb. It doesn't like...
Because they say it again. It's yeah. so stupid.
Or if they find the cure for deja vu. Not me. Or if they find the cure for deja vu, not me. I was like,
and that's the kind of just inane brilliance that I can love. And like, oh, and now it's raining inside the office. Okay.
So it reminded me of a commercial that the agency I work at that just filmed, and it's for champagne. It's a champagne commercial. It's very funny. But at the end,
I can see now is when Orson Welles just absolutely cannot remember anything
of it. Yeah, the drunk Orson Welles wine commercial is so amazing. He's just so drunk. Anyway, but at the end of it, the lead actress kind of riffed on what days you could like drink this champagne.
Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Wednesday.
Well, she was just like Mondays, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and she goes through this list, and then she goes to like holidays, and then she's like, you know, Mother's Day, Father's Day, Groundhog's Day, Groundhog's Day, Groundhog's Day, Groundhog's Day, Groundhog's Day. Groundhogs, and she just says Groundhog's Day like 10 times, which is just like so dumb, but I loved it so much. So there's like, there are some little jokes in this movie that tickled me in that kind of way.
Again, like, there's something so just like British comedy troupe mm-hmm. about this movie.
Yeah, I actually didn't care about the cameos. They were entertaining in the sense of like, oh, here's Stephen Fry as a judge. But a couple of the jokes hit me kind of fun.
Yeah. I don't know if I have a favorite character. I love the extremely, like, straight woman, Barbara, the other handler.
Yes.
Just because, yeah, like, she's kind of fun. She's just sort of serious and... it's funny because I like a lot of the other stuff that's going on, but just something about extremely, like, harried, frustrated handlers in general tends to tickle me. I think my favorite part is the Poirot dream sequence.
Yeah.
When Hugh Laurie is Poirot and they're talking about, like, oh, you know, so many bullets, so horrible.
And how Baby Spice's smile can, like, let her get away with anything.
Exactly, because she's sitting there just, like, piled with
all the weapons.
All the weapons, all the armaments, all the ammunition, and she smiles. And I don't know why it's, again, everything so stupid, so silly, so wild.
And
that part just made me happy.
It is so 90s in that all the dream sequences, all those little moments are filmed with this weird, like, distorted
Vaseline filter around the edges.
Yeah, Vaseline filter, but also what do they call that when the whole thing is, like, at a really dramatic, like, the
tilt.
Image, it's not just that the camera's tilted like Batman villains, it's like it's been stretched and warped, like the image is like
some sort of fisheye.
Yeah, the image is basically like italics. And it's, like, stretched out and diagonal, and it's just so weird.
Do you have a favorite part aside from the deja vu?
I mean...
Do you have a favorite part aside from the deja vu? I'm sorry. I had to.
I'm an easy mark. I don't know. I think probably if I had to pick a favorite part... It would be, like, towards the end, when Mark McKinney is, like, going through the final pitch, the final movie pitch, and he's kind of narrating what is happening in the movie, because that's when it just, like, that's when the movie kind of takes its any pretense off the table. Not that it really had a whole lot to begin with, but... It just gets so wacky for about 5 minutes.
It's like the finale of The Hills, where it just, like,
oh,
zooms
yeah, where
out
they, like,
and they
zoom
step
out
on,
and they're on a set. Yeah.
It's that.
That I think about, I think about the finale of The Hills at least once a week. Because I'm like, they played everybody. They played everyone.
Or did they? Did they play you when they told you that they played you?
Right. Like, or was it all real and they just did that to make us think it was all scripted? Oh my gosh. I think about that finale so much.
The great storytelling of our time.
Which is ironic because I didn't really watch The Hills that much. I just kind of absorbed it, like, tangentially as it was on. But I do think about that final moment.
It's actually, The Hills is really interesting because it set a lot of the tone for the modern reality TV, like how you shoot, how you create.
Oh, I know.
How you.
Yeah.
That's not what this episode
is
about.
It also set the tone for, like, we should do like some Hills or stuff like that would be kind of, that would be a fun, like, change of pace is, like, do a season of The Hills or something.
How do we fix The Hills?
Jenna is rewatching Gossip Girl right now. Which I'm like, Gossip Girl is just basically The Hills with a bit more of a obvious script. I think that last little section is probably my favorite. It's meta and weird. It kind of goes off the rails. There's a bomb on the bus. It's like, it gets super wacky. And then the whole thing of, like, then Richard O'Brien hits his head and repents. And regrets everything everything he's narrating the characters then say, which is a really mm-hmm. hokey, easy joke, but I liked it.
Was there anything that you specifically hated?
Nothing that I hated. I hated the alien costumes. They were creeped me out. I did not like those. But, like, otherwise, it was just like, this movie is just it's two ideas. It's two ideas in a notepad. Like, that's what this movie is. Like, it's just...
It's also kind of like, you know, if something is yummy, it'll be yummy on pizza. which is not necessarily the case.
Yeah.
Where it's like, it's fast food, and then you've just, like, stacked things.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a bit of like, yeah, I don't want Taco Bell on top of my pizza, please. Thank you. I'd rather not. Some people might, but not me.
So the ending, I feel like there's not much of an end there.
They do a concert. Right?
They do the concert, and then you get the meta
of now they're shooting scenes. The movie.
Yeah.
That but, he pitched.
So, and then they do the, like, hey, you're looking at people in the audience.
Which, actually, I will say, if I had a part I hated, I actually hated that. Because it just kept,
it's like, so bad.
The beauty of Ferris Bueller is he's like, what are you still doing here? Go home. And he says, like, two things. And it's like, yeah, get out of here. And then he leaves. This, they just talk to us, the audience, and then they're like,
for 18 minutes.
Oh, yeah. We also have to talk to the home video audience in case people are watching this on video. So let's also add a bit for them. But then let's go back to the theater thing, you know, and it's just like, it just keeps going. Yeah. That is maybe my least favorite part.
And I think that's something that could have worked if it had been different actors. Mm-hmm. Like if they had set up the characters.
Yeah.
Differently. Okay, so on Rotten Tomatoes, this has a 34% fresh rating from critics and a 45% and a 45% from audiences. It has a 3.5 on IMDb.
Wow. Wow. Everything has a 6 on IMDb.
Mm-hmm. This movie is included on Roger Ebert's most hated list.
I could absolutely see that.
For months after seeing it, he was deeming it as the worst film of that year until he saw Armageddon and it took the title. But it still ended up on, like, the list of worst of the year movies, plural. What would you give this out of 10 ridiculously high platform shoes?
Oh.
Wait, is that too close to the Mamma Mia rating system? What would you give this out of
10? What did 10... we rate Mamma Mia with?
Platform boots.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so out of 10...
Union Jacks?
Union Jack painted buses.
Okay, out of 10 Union Jack painted buses that are bigger on the inside, I would give it... I think 3 is a... 3 is a solid score. Like, there's enough weirdness to kind of trudge through, but there are much better ways to consume very similar jokes and vibes and things that don't involve having to, like, wade through this absolute utter mess of a movie.
I give this 6.5 buses.
Wow.
Because it just brings me joy. And I think also the fact that it is pretty much 90 minutes on the dot, it's like, yeah. it doesn't just keep going. And it goes by so quickly. Like, yes, it does kind of trudge on, but it's also like, if you told me that it was an hour long, I could have believed you. It's so ridiculous. It's so ridiculous. It brings me such joy. It's so ridiculous. I can't help it.
I get it. I know that there are people that I know who really love this movie because it's, like, campy and dumb and goofy.
Mm-hmm.
And I totally get that. I think, like, yeah, it just, it didn't do it for me.
All right. Rhetorical question. Can this movie be fixed?
Well, yes.
Because my thing, I mean, a little bit more acting coaching, I think, just so that, like, because you have to be a little more committed to bad writing. You know what I mean? Like, you have to be a little more into it. But the thing that I thought about is, it needs, and I feel kind of silly saying this about this movie, but it does need some sort of more, like, emotional base or depth. And I think what it needs is, because when the girls all go to different places, to their homes, and then they meet up and reminisce, they haven't really had a fight. Like, Richard E. Grant says, like, oh, I think I've just said about the breakup of the Spice Girls. And he doesn't really. They just, like, go home and sleep, you know?
Yeah.
And... because in the beginning, the newspaper or the gossip magnate, you know, he talks about, like, ooh, the Spice Girls break up as a headline. And I feel like you need to actually come back to that, because he sends the photographer to like break them up and like create drama, but he never does. And I'm like, so create some drama, have them have an actual fight, which would be more of an obstacle towards the concert than just falling into water or, you know, all the tiny little obstacles. Just like, because then you actually care a little bit more when they come together, first off, and then they, you know, help their friend deliver the baby, and, you know, all of these things that would just give this something more, where like they have a fight about something, you know, because I kept expecting that to happen, because like you set it up at the beginning. And yeah, that, I think, would give it a little bit more. I could see, like, maybe it was in the script and they just couldn't act.
Yeah, I mean, that is true. Like, now that you say that, there is never that moment, which you get in every band film, I feel like, which is, like, the band's about to break up. Like there's, like, a brief little, like...
It's barely even a spat. Yeah. And they're more annoyed at their manager than at each other.
Right, right.
And what you need there is, like, everybody says things they regret, because that makes it meaningful when they come back to the fictional coffee shop where they fictionally got to know each other, you know?
Yeah, I agree that would help. For me, like, the fix is make it weirder. Like, that is... which I know is kind of, because the movie's already so weird, but make it like...
No, actually, I mean, those are my make it weirder then, is to lean into some of the things they start. Like, yeah, for instance, yeah. When you were talking about like they're talking about the plot of the movie as it's going on, or like possible plot points. And I'm like, lean into that more. Go full like Stranger Than Fiction, where yeah. they have to sort of fight against the narrator or the script yeah. or the plot.
Or suddenly have actors playing all the Spice Girls. You know?
That too. But you know what I mean? Like, where they try to talk back to the narrator, or they're confused because, like, suddenly, like, sort of Truman Show style, they're like, wait, what's going on? Like, lean into that, like, more. But also, together with that, we have, obviously, Adina from Ab Fab there. So she, same universe, confirmed. And as you mentioned, we have a lot of Rocky Horror Picture Show. And I'm like, I just want all of the famous people who cameo either as themselves or as characters to just like bring in stuff from that universe.
Yeah, just create a Spice World cinematic universe.
Because it's Spice World, you know?
That is my one complaint. It's Spice World. They're in mainly London with a little bit of Europe peppered in there, but like...
Yeah. So just like have it become more of a Spice World. Have it become weirder and weirder. Like everyone is not themselves as cameo, but like they bring with them their property, you know? And just yeah. like have that, more of that. Just lean into it aggressively, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's fun. For me, it was go full Yellow Submarine and do this as an animated movie.
I want to see the Spice Girls meet Blue Meanies.
Oh my god, yeah. Well, because then you could do that kind of stuff. Like, mm-hmm. you could...
Instead of the aliens.
You could have... You could, like... You know, this is like a weird point of reference, but have you seen the trailer for the new Space Jam movie?
No.
So the new Space Jam movie...
I don't understand why you would try to improve on perfection.
Right. But it is, instead of, like... live action going into cartoon world, and this is like it's almost like the Warner Brothers cinematic universe. From what I can gather from the trailers, it's LeBron James playing basketball with all the Looney Tunes characters in CG, but then the audience is like King Kong and you know, Dementors. So
it's kind of like Roger Rabbit.
Yes. Feel yes. more. Like, in the sense that it is bringing all these characters and cameos and references that you might recognize from Warner Brothers properties. And so, to me, I'm like, with animation, you can expand your cameo roster, and you could have the voice actors, you could have all that. Like, there's so much you could do, and it could be so wacky and weird. You know, I just think, it could be so fun if it were animated.
I mean, this sounds like a very good sequel.
Yeah. Yeah, get him back. One last reunion tour. What would we call it? Because it would have to be it would be Spice World.
But the Spicening.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Spice World, even hotter.
Oh, ooh, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. I was thinking of something that would be like an animation pun mm-hmm. or something, like Drawn Together. No, but I think that's a show.
Yeah. Or I'm trying to think of lyrics from their songs as well. Anyway, did we learn anything from this movie? I really want to know what your answer is here.
I learned that even a very clearly bit of just marketing propaganda for a band that was already the biggest thing in the world can have a joke that makes me laugh out loud. So I can't be too much of a comedy snob if Spice World literally made me laugh out loud.
Okay. Did you learn anything from this? I'm sorry.
That deja vu joke, I'm giving that joke way too much credit than it needs, but it was good.
I learned that I also really like the deja vu joke and will perform stupid callback humor in a podcast.
Yeah, I love it.
Next week, we'll be talking about Crazy Rich Asians. Jaunty June has flowed over into Jaunty July.
You We're can busy. Find our I got notes. A kid and a new job. It's hard.
You can find our show notes at theincomparable.com/chickflickfix. We're chickflickfix on Twitter and Instagram. Feel free to talk to us there. We're chickflickfix@gmail.com. If you want to suggest movies or guests, rate, review, subscribe, all those things. We'll be back next week. Say goodbye, AJ.
Goodbye, AJ.